to continue looking at church covenant. Last couple of weeks, we've been looking at the third paragraph, to walk circumspectly or carefully in the world. It goes on to say to be just in our dealings, faithful in our engagements, exemplary in our deportment or in our conduct. All of that has to do with walking circumspectly, walking carefully. We see here there's a pledge to be above reproach, to be just in our dealings, faithful in our engagements, exemplary in our deportment. So we want to look at that part of the covenant this evening. Begin by considering to be just in our dealings. Not just with one another, but all our dealings. All our dealings out in the world. So what this is a pledge to honesty, pledge to integrity, which of course is good character. So it's a pledge to have good character. It is a pledge to be ethical. Basically, it's a pledge to be trustworthy, that others will be able to trust us. They'll be able to trust what we say. And of course, our world is far from being a world of honesty and integrity. Our world is characterized by dishonesty, characterized by fraud and corruption, swindling of all kinds, and cheating and craftiness and treachery, and deceit, crookedness, whatever other word you can think of. But God's people are to be different. God's people are to stand out as a people of great integrity. And perhaps it's getting harder all the time because of the world that we live in, but it is our responsibility to be a people of integrity, not to have our thoughts governed by the thinking of the world, not to be conformed to the things that characterize the world. Notice in the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 6, we see that the Corinthian church had a lot of problems, but they were sternly rebuked by Paul for defrauding one another and going to court against one another before the world, which of course was a terrible testimony. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, in verse 6 through verse 8, Paul says, "But brother goeth to law with brother, and that before the unbelievers. Now therefore there is utterly a fault among you," that is the church of Corinth, as a body of Christ, "because ye go to law with one another. Why do you not rather take wrong? Why do you not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? And that if it comes down to in a church body, you're better off taking the wrong than taking a church member to court. You're better off being defrauded rather than take a church member to court. Nay, ye do wrong and defraud, and that your brethren." Now, the Bible teaches, of course, in 1 Corinthians, and it's not the point of the lesson tonight, so we're not going to spend time on it. The Bible teaches that church has authority in all matters that concern church members' relationship with one another. So the church is to take care of these matters and not the courts. But there was a real problem because this was a people who were not only being dishonest out in the world, certainly they were, but they were defrauding one another. And this part of the covenant, of course, is a pledge not to do that, but it is a pledge to honesty. And all through the scriptures, dishonesty in business or whatever matters we have to do daily, all through the scriptures, dishonesty is condemned. And honesty is always commended. Notice in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, when God has given his laws to Israel, he made sure that there were laws concerning business dealings and just everyday affairs. In Leviticus 19, verse 35 and verse 36, ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. In meat yard, and the things he's mentioning are standards of measurement, which would apply to selling. In meat yard, in weight, or in measure. Just balances, just weights, a just epah, and a just hin shall ye have. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. And then notice in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 25, we'll read verses 13 and verse 15. Deuteronomy, chapter 25, verse 13. Thou shalt not have in thy bag divers weights, a great and a small. In other words, they were to treat everybody fairly. Verse 15, but thou shalt have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and just measure shalt thou have, that thy days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. So these were laws for the land of Canaan. Then in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 17, book of Jeremiah, chapter 17, we'll read verse 11. As the partridge sitteth on eggs and hatcheth them not, so he that getteth riches and not by right shall leave them in the midst of his days, and in his end shall be a fool. And then in Jeremiah chapter 22, in verse 13, woe unto him that buildeth his house by unrighteousness, and his chambers by wrong, that useth his neighbor's service without wages, and giveth him not for his work. Again, there, the Lord is talking about integrity. The Lord's talking about honesty. He's talking about treating people fairly. He's saying you pay someone a fair wage. You do not try to cheat somebody out of their way. So the Lord has much to say about integrity, has much to say about honesty and just simply treating people fairly. Now Solomon, in his wisdom, had much to say also upon the subject of dishonesty and honesty. He spoke of dishonesty and honesty in selling, which, again, we read there in Leviticus 19 and also in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 25. But Solomon had something to say on that as well. Notice in Proverbs chapter 11, Proverbs chapter 11, in verse 1, a false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Now, a couple different occasions, I've heard people preach from Proverbs 11, verse 1, a false balance is abomination of the Lord, and they apply it to you need balance in your life. That's not what this verse is talking about. This verse is talking about the same thing that God addressed in Leviticus 19 and in Deuteronomy chapter 25. A false balance, that is a balance that was used in weighing foods, weighing goods to sell, a balance that was unfair, is an abomination unto the Lord. It's not talking about balance in our lives. There's other scriptures that talked about that, but this one, that's not what this is talking about. And the other part of the verse makes it plain, but a just weight is his delight. That simply means that dishonesty is an abomination to God. To take an advantage of someone so you can be benefited is abomination to God. But a just weight, that is fairness, is his delight. And then notice in Proverbs chapter 16, Proverbs 16 and verse 8, we read, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. And then notice in Proverbs chapter 20, Proverbs 20 and verse 14. Here he's talking about you and I buying something. You see, a person can be dishonest in selling you something, but you can be dishonest in your bargaining. There's nothing wrong with bargaining. There's nothing wrong with talking to somebody about a price. Nothing wrong with that. But you have to be honest about it. And this is what he addresses here in Proverbs 20 and verse 14. It is not, saith the buyer. That is, it's nothing, it's worthless. But when he has gone his way, then he boasteth. Oh, what a deal I got. He's convinced the buyer that the thing he's selling is a piece of junk. All the time, all along, he knows it isn't. That's dishonesty. So it doesn't just apply to selling. It also applies to buying as well. We're to have integrity in all of our dealings. In Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 6, we see the getting of treasures, which would be buying or selling here, the getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a vanity tossed to and fro of them that seek death. You can sell something and lie about it. You can buy something and not be truthful and in order to get a better deal. Again, nothing wrong with trying to get a better deal, but you have to remember, you in your endeavor to get a better deal, you better make sure you're being honest and make sure that you're not cheating that individual as well, because this is what Solomon is talking about. He also warned about partnership with dishonest persons. If we know that someone is dishonest, it would be wise for us, of course, not to be in partnership with them. We do not want our name connected with them. In Proverbs 29, in verse 24, whoso is partner with a thief hateth his own soul. He heareth cursing and bewrayeth it not. So, again, that's just part of the integrity. If we go back to Proverbs chapter 11, where we read a false balance is an abomination to the Lord. As you read on there in those verses, I believe Solomon mentions some principles that will prevent us from having a false balance, or will prevent us from being dishonest. In verse 2 of Proverbs 11, again, he's made the statement, a false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. So he's talking about integrity. He's talking about honesty. He has condemned dishonesty. When pride cometh, then cometh shame. But with the lowly is wisdom. So So one thing we need to prevent a false balance, whether, again, it doesn't matter. If it's buying, selling, it doesn't matter. One thing we need to prevent a false balance or dishonesty is humility. Just humility will correct the problem of dishonesty. And then notice in verse 3, he says, "The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them." So we have humility, and now here in verse 3, we have integrity of purpose. That'll keep us honest. Just having integrity of purpose. It's not the it's not the attitude, "I'll get them before they get me." And believe me, the world, to a large extent, in business dealings, they're out to get you. We all know that. We're not to develop the attitude, "Well, I'm going to get them before they get me." That's we've fallen into the, if we do that, we've fallen into the same mindset. And it becomes a contest. It becomes a battle of who can be dishonest first, who can take most advantage of the situation. So there has to be integrity of purpose. Then notice in verse 4, "Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death." Here we have, there has to be a right estimate of wealth. And in a wrong estimate of wealth will lead you to be dishonest. But as long as we have a right estimate of wealth, then we'll have more of a tendency to be honest. And then, of course, he mentions righteousness as well. There has to be a righteousness of heart. We see in verse 5, "The righteousness of the perfect shall direct his way, but the wicked shall fall by his own wickedness. The righteousness of the upright shall deliver them, but transgressors shall be taken in their own naughtiness." So the Scriptures condemn dishonesty. The Scriptures commend honesty. And we see the Bible teaches us that honesty is to be a characteristic of a child of God. It is to be a characteristic of the child of God's daily walk. In all their business dealings, in all their interpersonal dealings, they are to be characterized by honesty. They are to be characterized by integrity. Children need to be taught honesty. They need to be taught integrity, because the world is teaching them just the opposite. Hollywood teaches just the opposite. Everything around us teaches us just the opposite. And again, if we're not careful, we will develop that mindset. So as a child of God, honesty should characterize our conduct, our person. In the book of Romans chapter 13, and verse 13, "Let us walk honestly as in the day." Let us walk honestly. That is, let us be people of integrity. Then notice in Ephesians chapter 4, and we'll read verse 28. Ephesians 4, verse 28. "Let him that stole steal no more." That is, this is talking about a person who, before they were saved, they were a thief. That's the stop. "Let him that stole steal no more. But rather," that is, rather than stealing, "let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good," which teaches again integrity, "that he may have to give to him that needeth." And then notice in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, we'll read verse 6, and we'll read verse 12, "that no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter, because that the Lord is the avenger of all such. As we also have forewarned you and testify, that we defraud not in any matter. And then in verse 12, that ye may walk honestly toward them that are without, or them that are outside of the assembly, that ye may have lack of nothing. So this part of the covenant deals with honesty and integrity, that we'll be honest, that we'll be faithful in all of our dealings. But there, it goes on in the covenant and says that we will also be faithful in our engagements. Faithful in our engagements. This has a lot to do with integrity. Now, we're not so much dealing here with dishonesty as we are with integrity. Faithfulness to our word. Faithfulness to our agreements. That is our pledge. So this has to do with truthfulness. This has to do with commitment, trustworthiness, reliability. It is a terrible, terrible testimony for a child of God not to be reliable. Why aren't people reliable? What makes someone unreliable? When they consistently tell you they're going to do something and they don't do it. That makes them unreliable. It shows a great lack of integrity. They're not faithful to their engagements. Now, this would cover, again, it covers a wide range, just as honesty and dishonesty. This trustworthiness, this reliability, covers our debts. You do not buy something that you know you cannot pay for just because you have a credit card and you have no intention of paying for it. That's stealing. I don't care what anybody else calls it. That's stealing. And again, it's not being faithful in our engagements. So this has to do with our debts. We're to find a way, an honest way, to pay our debts. It also has to do with appointments. Faithful in our engagements. That means we are faithful to our appointments. Say, okay, I will meet you at 10 o'clock. You know what that means? It means you ought to be there by 9:45. It doesn't mean that you're there at 10:15 or 10:30. And I realize things can happen that is going to cause people to be late. But what is it that someone tells you, I'll be at your house at 10 o'clock, and you say to your wife or you say to your husband, well, I won't expect them to 10:45. What caused that? Because through the years, you're always 30 minutes, 45 minutes later than what you said. So people, when you say, I'll be there at 10 o'clock, they know. Well, that means 10:45. But don't you see, that is a lack of integrity. It's a lack of integrity. One of the most precious things that a person has is time. And if you tell somebody, I'm going to be there at 10, and they stand at their window looking for you for a half hour, you have robbed them of a half hour of time. A half hour that they're never going to get back. And you come and you say, oh, I'm sorry I'm late. You just robbed me of a half hour. You rob me of one of the most precious things I have, time. So we have to be faithful to our engagements. Again, we're not talking, we realize, again, things can happen. I'm talking about people who are habitually late. And it drives me up a wall. People who are habitually late. Because people who are habitually late, you may not like it, are self-centered individuals. They do not think of anybody but themselves. They do not think of the fact that they're wasting your day. They don't think of that. It doesn't enter their mind. So we have to be faithful to our appointments. And if you're going to be running late, call. I'm running a little behind. I'm not going to be able to be there at 10 o'clock. I'll be there at whatever. But don't just keep someone waiting. And don't have the testimony where everybody says, well, they say 10 o'clock, but we know what that means. We'll expect them around 11. That shows a lack of integrity. So we are to be a people that are faithful to our engagements, which really has to do with being faithful to our word. Notice in James chapter 5, very, very simple verse here. James chapter 5. Verse 12. But above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath. That is, you should not have to say, I promise you. You shouldn't have to say that. Your word should be good enough. And he goes on, he says, but let your yea be yea. What's that mean? That means when you say yes, you mean yes. And let your nay be nay. What's that mean? When you say no, you mean no. In other words, when you say something, you mean it. When you say something, you are a person of your word. And God's people ought to be known to be a people of their word. If they say something, you don't need them to sign a document. You don't need them to sign 50 sheets of paper. You don't need them to promise you on a stack of Bibles. It's good enough that they said they would do it. That's reliability. That's what makes people reliable. Again, it all gets back to integrity. And we need to teach our children. If a child tells a friend, I'm going to be at your house at 10 o'clock, he needs to be there at 10 o'clock. Not 10:15. They need to be taught these things. But people who are habitually late, they'll say something. I don't know why I'm always running late. Well, I do. It's not that difficult. It's not that difficult. You didn't leave early enough. It's as simple as that. If you know you're going to be late, leave earlier. I mean, it's not difficult. But again, they don't care. They don't care. It gets down to self-centeredness. Again, I get off that soapbox. There's a time, there's also a pledge here to be exemplary in our deportment or in our behavior. To be exemplary simply means to be an example. We're to be an example in our behavior. To be an example is to be a model. A model to be followed. It means to be outstanding. It means to be excellent, to be admirable and commendable. It's to have commendable behavior, excellent behavior, outstanding and admirable behavior. So we're to be an example. All through the New Testament, Paul used himself as an example. He told church after church, follow the example that I leave you. We ought to be able to do that. We ought to live in such a way that our life is a good example to others. Not a bad example, but a good example to others. And we're not going to take the time tonight, but you can go through and you can look at all the times that Paul called upon churches or individuals to look at him as an example. Notice what he said to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12. He said, let no man despise or think lightly of thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers. And then he mentions some areas in which he was to be an example. He says, you be an example in word. Again, let your yea be nay, your yea be yea, your nay be nay. Be an example in word or in speech. Be an example in conversation. That's talking about your daily life. Be an example in your daily conduct. Be an example in your daily deportment. In charity, that is, in love. In spirit, which has to do with attitude. Be an example. Be an example in faith. Be an example in purity. He says, be an example. And this part of the covenant is we're making a pledge that we will be an example. That we will be an example to our family. That we will be an example to those we work with. That we will be an example to those that we go to school with. That we will be an example to our neighbors. That we will be an example to everyone we come in contact with. And that we'll be an example to one another. Will be an example to one another. And many folks, many church members, I'm afraid, do not realize, I choose to believe they don't realize the power of their example. A lot of people set bad examples. A lot of church members set bad examples. They set bad examples of children. They set bad examples in their church attendance. They set bad examples in their just the way they conduct themselves. They set bad examples in their spirit toward church and their attitude toward church. They set bad examples. And we should never, it should always scare us and greatly concern us that we would be a bad example to anybody. But let alone to be a bad example to another church member. And again, we've said this before. I can't tell you how many times people will say, in order to justify themselves, well, so-and-so's doing the same thing. Someone set a bad example. That doesn't excuse the other person. But don't you see, a bad example has been set. Or you go to talk to somebody to try to let them know that they're not doing something right. And they'll say, well, why don't you go talk to so-and-so too, because they're doing the same thing. Bad example. And it goes on all the time. It happens all the time. So we need to be very, very careful that we do not set a bad example. Especially that we do not set a bad example of what a church member should be to children. That you do not set a bad example to them. Shouldn't set a bad example to anybody. Children are the future members, and they're learning to be church members right now. And they learn from our example. Just like they're learning to be husbands and wives right now. And how do they learn that? By mom and dad. So it's so important that we be a good example at all times. So this part of the covenant has to do with integrity, honesty, has to do with being a people of our word, of being a good example to others. It has everything to do with just good character. The world today knows very little about good character. Very little. You don't meet a whole lot of people anymore that are people of character, good character. But certainly we ought to expect it. We ought to expect it from one another. We ought to expect it from children of God. We don't expect it from the world. We're pleasantly surprised when we find it in the world. But we don't expect it. But we do. We should be able to expect it from one another. So let us be a people of good character. And we would be a people that set an example. That we would be an example of good to one another. And that our lives would not be able to be used as a bad example. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in a verse of song. Let's all stand. Brother Larry will lead us in singing.
278. 278.